My name is Quentin Flynn. I'm here on The Geek Show. Why? Because I play Raiden in the Metal Gear series. I am Lightning, the Rain Transformed, and I have been transformed by hanging out on this show. So tune in and turn on. You'll love it. The Geek Show. It rocks.
Hi everyone, and welcome to a very special edition of The Geek Show's Press X, our sporadic and entirely voluntary video games podcast. And today we are actually going to be talking about EGX, or is it Eurogamer Expo? Today,
no, it's EGX.
It's just EGX, is it? Right. As you can hear, I've got Rob with me. I've got Ryan with me. Say hello, guys.
Hello.
Now, I was unfortunately unable to go to EGX, but my two wonderful hosts did manage to go. So, how was EGX?
Yes, we braved the Badlands and we travelled all the way down to Birmingham and the NEC, which is the first time it's been here. I'm not sure exactly where it was. Ryan will be more familiar with where it used to be.
It used to be in Earl's Court, but the past couple of years it's moved to the NEC in Birmingham.
Yeah, it's at the Birmingham International Airport, and it's a fantastic venue for it, I'll be honest.
You said it was like an aircraft carrier.
Well, it's basically, I don't know the history of it, but the NEC is like the old Birmingham Airport, but instead of just knocking it down, they took that real estate and turned it into sort of a hive of venues. So it's like a load of old aircraft carriers which double up as event venues, because when we were there, there was other things. There was like Place in the Sun Live. There was like the Bicycle Show, which has like a typeface, which is very similar to ours, actually, which is really confusing.
Okay.
In the back, I think it was halls 8 through 10 was EGX 2016.
I can imagine that got a little bit confusing if you suddenly ended up like a Place in the Sun Live.
It was Rob's first time going, and I had to sort of like make him aware like how big the place is, and my God, was he thrown off.
It's basically the size of the town that we call home, Middlesbrough. It's basically the size of its town centre.
So did you feel like a very small speck in the universe, Rob?
Kind of, but it was also amazing, you know, open new world, loads of potential. So loads of, you know, indie developers, and, well, it was a intimidating start to the event, I can't lie there, because, you know, when we've been to events in the past, it's kind of like, you get there, we're there. This is, you get there, you walk half a mile, you're there.
I always find EGX overwhelming at first in general.
Well, I don't know. If you've not been before, if you've seen, like, the footage for, like, E3, it's fundamentally the same thing. It's like, visually and, you know, how it's all laid out. Because at the front was, like, the... It's never used to be like this. Ryan was commenting on it throughout the weekend. But at the front, it's like all the EGX res things.
Yeah.
Which is their indie branch.
Yeah. And towards the left-hand side, there was this like white complex where it had like, I think it was like green light stuff for Steam.
Yeah. Yeah, that's correct.
And just dotted around was like displays. There was like an EGX res place where they were doing talks. There was a Virgin Media stand where they were playing Destiny all weekend. So despite people hating Destiny, it's still very, very popular. There was a cosplay bit going further back and just lots of big displays. I think there was a big thing for FIFA. There was a bit at the side where I believe it was Gran Turismo in sort of these little circular booths. If you look on our Facebook page, there's a picture of circular booths where people are sat in it and they've got like VR visors that go over their head. So you're really integrated into the game.
There's something for everyone.
Yeah, and so, you go further and further back, and eventually at the end of the room, there was the Plus 18 area, which had the Nozulous Rift for South Park, the smelly thing, Titanfall, and Skies of War 4.
Yeah, going back to what you were saying earlier, I would say like the big thing this year was VR and early PlayStation VR.
I just want to check, did you say Gears of War or Skiers of War?
Gears. There's no skiers.
Because I heard skiers. Sorry.
Anyway, I think we've got a lot of interviews to get through. We talked with a lot of lovely people, people who are passionate about their games, which I think is nice. It's nice, you know.
Yeah.
You get caught up in that infectious attitude.
I felt like this year there was a lot of sequels to games that have been running for about maybe like the 5+ years or so, and we mainly focused on indie games, mainly the fact that, you know, I was just like bundled with joy the entire time because indies have come so far, and I think what we're going to be showing off later on in the show, like, definitely looking forward to what indies have to offer, because it seems like with the game engines and everything, they've got to grips more with them. Like I say, it normally was a point where most indies were just, they were more 8-bit style games, or they, you know, they felt very familiar. And I think, again, now the technologies with Unreal 4 and Unity's got an upgrade, and people are just more used and it's more accessible. So people are creating some amazing stuff that, honestly, you look at it and think, oh my God, like, you can't believe that's an indie game.
Yeah, we're going to start off with something which continues like that. Merge Games, we've got a very good relationship with them. And we stopped off by their store, which got two games. The first one we talked to on the Saturday, but because it's out very soon, I think we'll have that interview now. And that's for the ninja stealth game, Aragami. So we'll be back in a little bit.
This is Ryan at EGX, and I'm joined by Edward, part of Lindsay Works. It's got Aragami. So, Aragami, really beautiful looking stealth game. Tell me more about it.
Basically, you are an undead assassin with the power to control the shadows. Basically, it means that you can teleport to the shadows and create a new ones to teleport or to be hidden there. You will have later on a bunch of skill powers, like throwing kunais, planting bombs to kill the enemies, all that kind of stuff, a little bit dishonored skill powers, you know?
I think the most, well, it's extremely eye-catching. It's very much like this cel-shaded cartoon, and it feels like a sort of, I would say sort of like, you know, sort of like Samurai Jack, more like adult, like cartoon.
Like a darker
very
journey.
Dark. Yeah.
Like a darker journey, maybe?
Yeah, and it definitely fits the character, obviously. Yeah. There's a lot of stealth games, and like, where did the idea of to do, like, and go in this direction come from?
Yeah, well, we liked old school hardcore games, you know? We didn't like the games when you get caught, you can beat all the enemies with doing combos or doing that kind of stuff. You don't feel the tension about being stealthy.
Yeah.
So we like the one-hit kill. You have one-hit kill, and the enemies had one-hit kill also. Hmm. So you feel the tension. You have to be strategic. You have to find the correct route to be behind the enemies to kill them. When you get caught, you can do nothing but run or be intelligent and smart for the next move.
Yeah, I like that, because there's so many, I say, stealth games. If it all goes south and you have to, like, engage in combat, it can sometimes make the game...
It breaks the stealth.
It breaks the stealth. It makes the game far too easy, and then people complain that these games are too short, and that's because they're just running around hacking and slashing and not playing how it should be played. And I appreciate that you've only given the players that one option.
Yeah. You get caught for maybe two enemies at the same time. If you don't are smart and you use their correct shadow power at the moment, you will die.
So you're quite relentless with it,
But you have the opportunity to move, but...
Yeah. But when can we see Aragami, and what platforms is it looking to be on?
Yeah, it will be released on PC, Linux, Mac, and then in PS4. You have the retail one, the box one also.
Yeah.
But basically, we will launch October the 4th on all the platforms. You can pre-order it also.
But no, thank you very much for that. It absolutely looks stunning. And I can't wait
thank
for
you
it to
very
come
much.
Out. Good luck.
Glad
that.
You like it.
Yeah, cheers.
Welcome back. So, interesting interview. Interesting. Yeah, I had a look at the trailer.
Thing I liked about that, though, when they were talking about it, is they're taking stealth back to being stealth. So, those guys over at Lindsay Works, looking forward to playing Aragami.
See, I watched the trailer for Aragami, and it didn't half remind me of Tenchu.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
kind of cross
saying, you know, if you get caught, you're dead, basically.
It reminded me of Tenchu, but it also was kind of Tenchu crossed with a little bit of Shinobi.
Yeah, I'm really liking what Merge doing, because, well, they're just very interesting. I mean, we could have had so many interviews, so many interviews. But the way we planned it is we tried to have something which was representative of like all the different types of games.
Yeah.
So we didn't have too much of one type of thing. We had like something that represents the good cross section.
It looks absolutely cool as well. It's like a cross between sort of Western sort of cartoon meets like manga.
What's a Sarugami?
They did say that. They said the manga artist on the board.
Yeah. But no, it looks really cool. Anyway, another game from Merge Games was Hoppico. And this was a fun one because we were sort of having a break at this point, weren't we, Rob?
Yeah, we thought we're going to talk to Aragami, but let's have a go at this first because we want to talk to these two. And it's one of these games. He talks about the references, but I can see this game becoming a sensation because it's incredibly addictive once you get the gist of it.
Yeah, it's so simple. I'll give like brief summary, but it's you basically use like the analog stick, and it's all about firing your character, and it has this really cool little 8-bit style to it as well. And you have to fire off into sort of this. I don't really know how to describe it. It's very obscure looking, very surreal.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it was super addicting, and Rob basically had to pull me off it because I
was like, Ryan, we got to interview the guy. Stop.
Oh, no, super addicting. Anyway, yeah, this is Hoppico.
Rob here at AGX 2016, and I'm here with Simon from Laserdog. And with Hoppico. It is Hoppico, it's not Happy Core, despite what the typeface says.
Yeah.
And what is Hoppico?
So Hoppico is a kind of platformer, 2D-inspired platformer. The big kind of spin on our game over others is that you only use one side of the controller, so you just use the right hand side. You kind of aim with the thumbstick and use the trigger for like a straight fast jump. It's a speedrunner, and yeah, it feels quite different.
It's very, very frighteningly addictive. I know it can't be intentional, but was it a happy accident that it came out that sort of?
We had quite early on, we had this idea of trying to make a speedrunner so that we had this idea of splitting levels into kind of multiple mini levels and forcing the player to kind of repeat play each of these little levels and complete five in a straight run to continue. And naturally, by repeating levels, you get better and better at them and faster and faster. So we're kind of naturally training speedrunners out of everybody who plays the game, which is feels really nice. Yeah,
it's nice. It's a platformer as well, and they've come full circle, really, haven't they? Say 10 years ago, they were critically unfashionable.
Yeah, right.
What do you think's special about them, you know, that you wanted to make, you know, Hoppico and that, you know, made them come back again? I mean, more in your case, but rather than the sort of grander scale, but what is it about the platformer that you...
Well, I think, probably quite a lot of us grew up with platformers. They seem to stick around, you know. We were re-inspired by sort of Meat Boy when that came about, just an awesome game. And I think when we set out to make Hoppico, we kind of thought, okay, well, what's going to stop us making a pretty bad Meat Boy? And we thought, okay, well, let's maybe look at the controls. Let's look at a way we can make a platformer that feels different from the minute you pick up the controller. And I think that's what we've got.
It's incredibly accessible, not just because of how it plays, but the art style as well. I don't really know how to describe it, to be honest.
Yeah, okay. I would say, again, it's retro-inspired. I'm actually the art guy. We're a two-man team, so thanks.
I don't mean that insulting. It's just
no,
very
that's cool.
Unique.
Yeah, thanks. Well, it's been described as a seizure, so we like a lot of kind of visual noise, like screen flashes, screen shake, that kind of thing. It kind of adds to the intensity of the game and that feeling of like frustration and satisfaction when you actually finish a run and that kind of thing.
It's very fun and I hope.
Did you have a listen to the soundtrack when you played?
It is, yeah.
It was all written on a Game Boy, the whole soundtrack's like 15 tracks, and it was written authentic Game Boy hardware. It's
that's fantastic.
Yeah, it sounds really cool.
So what platforms is?
Steam, Xbox, and PS4. We should be out. We're looking for about 4 weeks from now. So it's like, I think 12th of October is the kind of penciled release date. And it's going to be $5. £5.
Oh, wow. Really no excuse at that price point.
Well, hopefully.
Great
hopefully.
Fun, you know. And where can we find you? Where stuff online?
So we've got our site, laserdog.co.uk. We keep a really nice blog on there. Well, we think a really nice blog. We have a kind of dev blog. Detailing all the stuff that we're doing and loads of backstories about previous games we've worked on and that kind of thing. And then there's Hoppico. You can actually have a look at hoppico-game.com, which has got the details of when we're actually releasing and platforms and
other stuff on the game and soundtrack links and all that kind of stuff.
Excellent. Thank you for talking to us and cool. Good luck with the game.
Great. Thanks.
Welcome back. And that sounds like a very, very odd game.
It's the most addictive thing you can do while, you know, not taking drugs or alcohol or anything.
So
cool soundtrack.
I'm trying to figure out, is it a platformer? Is it a shoot 'em up? What is it?
Both. It's both.
It's both?
Yeah, it's a very singular game. It's like the screen's red. You're a little white guy. And as he says, you use half the controller. So you basically only need to use two buttons, basically. And you jump from platform to platform. But if you take, like each level has like a time of like 15 seconds or so.
Yeah.
And if you take longer than 15 seconds, you die. If you hit anything, you die. You've got to hit land in a specific point. And it just gets you hooked so much.
Okay.
So.
Agreed.
Okay. Yeah. What's next then, guys?
But we'll go back a little bit, because there's something a little bit connected to what we were talking about there, because Origami, ninja game. So we move to what this next game are representative of, and it's sort of first-time developers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because there's quite a few of them, wasn't there?
Well, yeah. It's a good place to show off your games.
Especially with being at the front of the crowd. And this one, we wanted to play it. It was the first people we talked to. But we were putting like tournaments on at 4 every day. We got there at like 2 on the Saturday, so...
It was busy all the time. It was extremely successful, and I can see why.
Yeah, because a little bit of Nidhogg, a ninja, so many things going on, and it is going to be a massive game.
Yeah, Black and White Bushido, it seems like they want to sort of bring back that couch multiplayer experience, and by God, was it successful, because there was constantly crowds upon crowds of people hovering around to like try and beat the friends and everything.
I mean, the crowd at the front of the place was pretty busy. It wasn't like everybody was rushing towards the back. I mean, everybody went to the back, had a go at what they wanted to have a go at, came to the front, and this is the sort of thing which really pulled in the punters. There was like also the VR stuff that was at the front, which was pulling people in, all sorts of things. But this is, I mean, we had a go at some of the games, but this is the one which I'm kicking myself that we never had a go at. I'm really kicking myself.
It's a massive shame.
So I've got to ask, what is Black and White Bushido?
We can describe it, but we'll let the guys themselves describe it a little bit better than we can, and we'll sort of come back and, you know, fill it in a little bit.
Okay.
Hello, Rob here, and we're at Eurogamer, and today we've been joined by Ben from Good Catch Games, and he's here with his debut game, as I understand, Black and White Bushido. So could you tell us a little bit about what Black and White Bushido is?
Yeah, Black and White Bushido is our first game. It's a four-player brawler. What happens is teams are divided into dark and light. If you're on the dark team, you can become invisible in the black areas of the screen. If you're on the light team, you can become invisible on the white areas of the screen. So it's a brawler game in the style of Super Smash Brothers or other games like that, but there's also a stealth element, which is that you can become invisible, sneak around, and jump out when people don't expect it.
I think the first question there is stealth. You know, it's usually associated with slow... methodical games, and seeing the game just there, it's very fast paced, it's very aggressive. So where did the idea originally come from to take something so, well, sedate and just completely thrown it on its head?
Well, I think what happened is that we wanted to make a kind of a game that we'd enjoy playing together, and we wanted to make a sort of sofa game that you could sit around, have a few beers and play with, and a brawler seemed like a natural choice. But what we wanted to do was add a little bit of something, that was a little turn of the wheel to give it something different. I don't know if you've ever seen a show called Samurai Jack, but there's an episode on that where he fights a ninja, and basically one of the creators was saying, oh, something like that could be really fun. So we're thinking, yeah, how would that work? And actually, the stealth bit took the longest of all the design, because making it work in terms of how do you actually sneak around, because you're all on one screen, if you can't see yourself, no one else can see yourself. But that's as much as an advantage as a problem. So we think got around it with the way it works, but it did present its own challenges.
Right, ninjas have been popular in games a lot of times through the past. And do you think now is an interesting time to do it again? Is it relevant? Because they go from cool to uncool and a sort of constant rotor, really.
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, actually. So when we started off, ninjas seemed like an obvious fit for sort of stealth killing. And then we actually had the same thought process as you have just said there, where we were like, actually, it feels a bit done. Like, we didn't really want to do that kind of style. So we moved towards spies, and we were kind of like, we were having this thing where it was like spies and we were sneaking around and you could plant a bomb or you could shoot with a gun and stuff like that. But it just didn't feel quite right, because while the character's design was nice, but the actual level layouts just felt harder to design and make them feel pleasing. And also, spies jumping really high felt a bit weird. Like, it felt like there should be things that move slowly and slither around at like ground level. And then, because it's only silhouettes of characters, what we did then was say, actually, well, these could be anything. So we made it, we did some designs for like alien ones where they had tails and bits of weird ears and horns poking out. And we kind of thought, okay, this could be an interesting thing where we just leave it to the player's imagination about what the characters really look like. And we did that. But then, because the game itself is actually a bit complex to come to terms with when you first look at it, you go, okay, so how do I play it and where am I and I'm lost? We sort of thought, well, it's already quite difficult to communicate with the player where they are, what they're meant to be doing. So actually, ninjas hiding in shadows, hiding in the light, jumping out of the night, it just felt like you naturally understood that that's what they should be doing. So we came full circle. And it was more of a case, it wasn't that we were desperate to do something with ninjas, it was more of a case of, it just felt like the most natural fit, being able to jump, sail through the air, attack, hide in the shadows. That's where we ended up.
And multiplayer, that's an interesting horse right now, isn't it? How would you position yourself in that? Because there's lots of games that, not beating around the bush, they tend to foster the more poisonous aspect of gaming, and there's other parts which are more community-led. It looks like you're sort of focusing this game to more community and, well, a more straight-up competition aspect, you know, the sofa, the multiplayer. Would you say that's a fair?
I think that's
the community aspect, I mean.
Yes, no, I think you're right. So I agree with what you say, and because when we first made the game, it wasn't actually online, it was offline only, because we wanted to do that sort of like couch sofa game thing where people are sitting around having a few beers playing together. And we thought the same as you, but then we brought it here a year ago. Actually, this is our 1 year anniversary. And people, we got good feedback, which was really nice, but everybody was saying, make it online. So we're like, okay, we'll do it. So we went away, started trying to do it, and it's taken ages. It's been really, really hard. So it's taken us a lot longer than we thought it would, but it's a year later, we're almost ready to launch on console, and the online is almost ready to go. So that's great. But it was more based on the fact that people wanted it. So that's why we thought, okay, if they want it, we'll try and do it.
Like, so that's going to be sort of the start of a sort of collaborative Q&A thing. If the audience who are playing this are really enjoying it and there's somewhere there feel the game would be improved, is that some sort of attitude you'd foster?
Yeah, like, we always want to be accessible to people who are playing the game. So we always read the Steam comments. We reply to them when we can. And if people tweet us or if people come to the conventions and play something and say, oh, this is a, if there's a good idea, if we can put it in, we always have. Often what seems like a good idea, we realise why it doesn't work, and that's because we've already tried it and it actually breaks some of the other mechanics. But we you know, if it's a good idea, we want to use it, definitely.
Excellent. And Black and White Bushido, so what format is that going to be on?
It's currently out on Steam. It's the offline only mode, but within a couple of months it will be on PC, Xbox One and PS4, and it will be online.
Excellent. Where can we find Black and White Bushido online?
So you can find us online at www.goodcatchgames.com. Black and White Bushido's on there. It's our first console game. There's also a mobile-based game on there. And there's a couple more in the pipeline. But that's where we are.
Excellent. Thank you very much for talking to us today.
Thank you.
And welcome back. Yeah, that game, I slowly picked up that a mechanic of that game is not playing the game. You can hide by not just standing there doing nothing.
Well, I think picturing it, Rob, it looks like Nidhogg, but with ninjas. Is this, you don't have like jumping across multiple screens, but you have these platforms. You are a ninja, and the light source constantly changes. And your ninja guy is either black or white.
Okay.
If you're a black ninja in the black area, you'd be invisible until you move.
Ah, okay.
And you got to kill like each other. If you're a white guy in a white area, you'd be invisible until you move. So what Ryan's saying is correct, but the light source is constantly changing. It has this incredibly twitch sort of reactive gameplay.
Yeah, really tense.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. See, especially if you played it with me, Ryan, you know that'd be.
Oh, yes. That's probably a good thing that we didn't.
See, that sounds like a really interesting idea. The fact that what you've essentially done is create, a Mexican standoff.
Yeah, I could picture that actually. You know, it was basically the Mexican standoff.
You've essentially created a Mexican standoff, but in a game
with ninjas.
Yeah,
and samurais. Yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, indie development studios don't have the biggest staff.
Yeah,
because it's like five or so people, but we someone around the area, you know. We're just waiting to get something. Wait, no, it's this odd-looking game. I mean, we all think we've played racing games, don't we?
We have
a pretty central understanding of what it takes to be a racing game.
Well,
yeah.
Me, I suppose, more so than most, because I played a lot of racing games.
You think you have, but you've not played anything like this. But, on this corner, there was a racing game which has, like, sort of line art. And looks very simple.
Okay.
We went in closer, and it's called Drive, Drive, Drive. And I don't want to explain it anymore before the interview because this is a concept which is so unlike anything ever, basically, that I let the guy himself talk about it. So here is Drive, Drive, Drive.
This is Ryan at EGX 2016, and I'm joined today by Gordon, who's brought us Drive, Drive, Drive. Now, tell the people what this racing game is, because I've had a go of it, and it's most certainly unique.
Oh, thanks very much. Yeah, Drive, Drive, Drive is a driving game about racing multiple tracks at the same time. So it is completely unique. Everything about the game is supposed to be new.
One track wasn't enough.
No, one track is boring. Well, the core concept of the game is that the best things about racing games is when you're battling for first.
Yes.
So you're battling for first, and then you're in first, and then sometimes it becomes a bit like a time trial. I'm in first, what am I going to do? Try and take the best racing
game. Yeah.
In this game, you have to manage multiple tracks at the same time. So if you're in first in one track, it can be guaranteed that the computer AI, which is stupid, will mess it up on another track. So you're constantly jumping between tracks, trying to manage in real time some simultaneous races.
That micromanaging aspect of it's really interesting. The demo I had to go, it was just free. Can it go up to Mars? It's just three tracks at one time?
It's between two and four. So
right, two and four.
Yeah, so all the tracks that you've played and your friend is playing have been created in the track creator in-game. So you can easily create a track, duplicate it, spin it around, put it in multiple gravities, smash them into each other, that kind of thing. So I tried it with six to answer your question, elaborate on your question, but that was cognitive load was even greater then. So, yeah.
But I must ask, how did the idea come about? Like, what made you think, you know, I want more and more tracks?
Well, I always have stupid ideas is the first point. Second one is playing with my kids with like Hot Wheels kind of tracks, you know, the ones with the loops that go around and around. And a really old game called Stunt Car Racer, which was on the Amiga back in the, what was it, 90s? No idea, I'm too old, I can't remember this. But yeah. So those two things kind of combined, maybe think about creating a racer like that, which is kind of in space with loads of stunts and loops and you fall off into nothing with a kind of, you know, DIY things interlocking.
Well, I haven't seen anything like it, and it's definitely stressful but fun.
Yeah. The idea is to, certainly mess with your face and ears as much as possible when you're playing it. So, yeah, it's not a game where you kind of relax into and walk through the trees. You are constantly crisis managing a bunch of tracks. But then again, if you're playing an arcade racer, what's the fun bit? Smashing into cars like in Burnout, chasing first place, just reaching it before the finishing line. That's the kind of emotions I'm trying to evoke.
Yeah, it's just more of everything.
More of everything in your face. And then boom, it's over. What was that? Well, that was quite nice.
I must ask, when's this out and what platforms it's going to be on?
Yeah, it's Drive, Drive, Drive is coming to PlayStation 4 and Steam towards the end of this year. November, December time, hopefully.
Well, I really look forward to that. And then again, thank you very much for that.
Oh, thanks for your time.
Cheers.
Thank you.
So welcome back. We both had a go at that. And as Brian was doing that interview, I was playing the game. It's micromanagement, as the guy says. But it's also a game where you need the description because the people who I took up after me says, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what this is. Which is unique, you know.
It's a really interesting idea, doing more than one race at the same time.
Like I said to Gordon, one track isn't enough.
Well, yeah, one track isn't enough. I'm looking at some of the images of Drive, 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 and the art style is really
simple but effective.
Yeah, it's really quite simple but effective. It kind of reminds me of the old Amiga driving games, stuff like Stunt Car Racer and the old Test Drive games, or Hard Driving, as it was. God, I'm old.
Yeah, I guess it is.
God, I'm old.
Well, yeah. Yeah. But it was a really welcoming vibe down there at the front, I think. We had a lot of fun down there.
So I'm curious about something. I mean, One of the things that we've learned from being a podcast network and doing all these shows over the years is that a lot of video game developers they struggle when it comes to promotion, marketing, that sort of thing. But what's it like when they go to these conventions, you know? How approachable are they?
Well, I don't think I ever actually have to grab somebody or cuddle anybody and say, we're going to do an interview. They noticed us and basically rushed over to us and say, can we help you? So they're very, very welcoming, because I think that's the fundamental vibe of it, you know. As I was saying to some of the people there, it's kind of a remit of what we are as the Geek Show. The big AAA people, you know, the big studios that were there. And there were a few. You know, FIFA was there, Sony were there, you know, Bandai Namco were there. Them don't need any help, do they?
No.
Promotion. But when you get to the small indie developers, you know, birds of a feather flock together, and there was just a general sort of, there was a vibe of
a community vibe, yeah.
And as some of the developers were saying, they were going over like games and saying, "Ooh, how'd you do that? That's really cool. I like that."
Yeah, it's a great place if you want to get in the industry to network and meet people and see where the industry's heading.
Yeah, there was a few competing podcasts, but obviously they're not as good as us, so. Yeah. And the odd shops as well. There was odd shops. It's the first time I personally have been to an event like this, but there was a stockist that was selling, like, dulled blades, like swords.
What?
Yeah.
Okay.
You could buy them on the spot. You had to get them shipped home, but, yeah.
Okay. Like
normal T-shirts. EGX doing their own merchandise. Getting out free energy drinks. And swords.
Sorry, T-shirts, energy drinks, and swords.
My favourite, my personal favourite was... meme mugs.
What?
Yeah. Just leave it at that.
Meme mugs?
Yep.
We're talking like I has cheeseburger type meme.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what the hell is a meme mug?
As well, manga.
Okay.
All sorts of people, you know. Well, I think what was also really interesting, sort of the community aspect of it, is we've been at like anime conventions so much.
Yeah.
And cosplay is a big part.
Yeah.
Cosplay wasn't really a big part here. And the main one, you played Revengeance, didn't you, Rob?
Yeah.
Somebody came as the Cyberdog.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
We were sat outside, just sat grabbing our breath for a while, thinking, I recognise that. Where do I recognise that from?
It's not that somebody dressed their dog up as Cyberdog, but somebody
he was
actually...
like full body suit as a Cyberdog.
It was amazing.
Was he on his hands and knees?
He went on his hands and was posing for photos.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's proper, proper cosplay. But generally, I reckon about 5% of people were cosplaying, if that, Ryan. What do you reckon?
Yeah, it's got its own little independent bit, but... like I say, it's more game-orientated.
You see a lot of it when you go to these anime conventions. You see a lot of video game-based cosplay.
Yeah.
I mean, for crying out loud, how many times do you see somebody from a Zelda game?
I don't think there was actually any Zelda.
And that's one of the big differences between anime conventions and video game conventions.
Well, it's interesting cosplay, you know. I think it's the general takeaway. From what little there was, it wasn't, like, in your face. Even though they did play Time Warp, and I was like, let's move, Ryan. Let's get out of here. It's the worst song it's ever been made. Move, move, move.
You managed to get Ryan away from the Time Warp?
He doesn't like it.
He doesn't like it, do you?
But you're a student, like Ryan. You're obliged to like it.
At the back end, though, there was some weird...
Sorry, what?
Bad wording, but the little nightmares which we talked about on our last Press X.
This is... My brain's just gone off in a whole other direction.
I know it has. Focus, Rob, focus. But if you've looked at our photos in the Facebook group, it'll show you what they did with little nightmares. This is the sort of, A-budget indie game. Based around sort of Grimm's fairy tales.
Yeah, it's like a mixture of like a bit of Burton and Laika.
Yeah.
It is, but...
the trailer shows like this kitchen that the little main character runs through. And they basically built this set for the kitchen.
See, that sounds impressive.
Yeah. Around the game, like most of the indie developers had like pretty basic sets, except one company, which we'll talk about in a minute. But
I mean, Little Nightmares, if I remember rightly, that's being published by Bandai Namco, so
yeah,
they've got a bit of weight behind them, so I'm not surprised about the set. But did you guys hide in the cupboards? Could you hide in the cupboards?
No, it was like a crowd, constantly a crowd in that one. Like, we would have loved to have tried the VR. I mean, I wanted to try the VR. We had the camera. We were ready to do the VR. And the other guys that record me being, oh, what is this? I know, this is scary. But the queues were, like, it was the VR year, wasn't it? I mean,
yeah.
Yes, VR comes out within, like, the month. Well, next month.
Well, non-consumer-friendly, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, but you managed to get a look at Little Nightmares, because I made the comment when we first saw the trailer that it reminded me of City of Lost Children.
Yeah, it does. There's all sorts of things there. There was like a mafia-free theatre, like sort of the old Americana theatres. Well, we'll come back to that. This is part one or part two. We don't want to front-load it too much.
Okay.
Yeah, like the last two interviews were on here.
Okay.
Like the local developers, the ones who are based up in Sunderland, I believe.
Okay.
Court Sink.
Ah, right, okay, yeah.
You talked about sort of sets. These were like within the vicinity of this area, which had like massive green tentacles just shooting up in the air. So it was very easy to find Court Sink. Very easy.
Don't Court Sink have like two VR titles, Esper 2 and Shoe, is it?
Not one of them. Esper is the VR one, isn't it?
Esper is the VR one, is it? And Shoe is a different game.
Shoe is like Trine, but like very cartoony and cute.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we'll let them talk for themselves. There's two games they had, like you said, Shoe and Esper, and here they are.
Hello, this is Ryan from The Geek Show, and today I'm joined by Gary from Court Sink Games. And today they've got two titles, Esper 2 and Shoe. So let's talk about Shoe first.
Okay.
This is a great-looking, colourful platformer. I love the art style. Where did sort of like the inspiration come from this?
So the inspiration is very much from the Rayman games. I mean, you can tell from a glance it's that type of platforming game. Yeah. It's very beautifully done. The art style is amazing, like you said. And also the audio really complements the game and the art style. It's very free-flowing, and it's a beautiful game just to pick up and play. The controls are super simple, and it is a beautiful game. Bryn is one of the lead artists on it. It's all his art style, his direction, and he really took and ran with it. It's a beautiful, beautiful game so far.
Yeah. And what are these colourful characters that you can play as?
So the main character is called Shu, and he's our hero. And at the beginning of the game, his village gets destroyed, and all of his friends, the villagers, they're thrown around the world. Each world has two villages, and you pick them up, and they give you abilities, powers to continue through the game, different ways to complete the game. For example, right now we're looking at it, there's Joro and Lati opens flowers, and Joro smashes through blocks. Each individual level, they've got different abilities to complete the level, different ways, always different villages.
Yeah, I get a bit of Sonic vibes from it as well. You got like the time trial aspect of it. Is that like a major part of the game that you're trying to push?
It is a big part. There's a few ways you can play the game. We've got a lot of collectibles. There's achievements for getting all the butterflies, all the mural pieces, there's hidden areas. Then there's also the time trials, which update the leaderboards around the world. You can play with your friends, compete. And also we've added a thing called Gushu timers, and they're dev timers in the company who have created their own times for each level. And then how that works is if you beat that level, you beat the developer's time. For example, my world is 4.3, and I've tried my hardest to get the best time on it. So if somebody beats it, I'll be super impressed. But it's that nice little challenge in a different way you can play the game.
Yeah. I like that, bringing the player closer to the art community.
Yeah.
So what platforms is Shoe going to be available on?
So it's getting released on October 4th, and it'll be available on PlayStation 4 and Steam, and then it'll be available later in the year on PlayStation Vita. So it'll be three platforms when it's all out.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. But let's talk about Esper 2.
Yes, of course.
So try and summarise for me like what Esper 2 is, like for people who might not know about it.
Okay, so Esper 2 is the second in the series of the Esper collection.
Yeah, yeah.
And you play as this agent who has telekinesis powers, and you start off in a basic training room, and it really it softens you into the game. It teaches you the controls, how it works. It's a puzzle game, fundamentally a puzzle game. You get better in there, let you complete puzzles to get further in the game. You start off in like a basement, this training facility, and then you go all the way around the world into space under the ocean, and you're chasing this bad guy. It's super cool. And the idea came from like a Professor Xavier type character. Ah. So it was for the Gear VR. You touch the side of your head. It'd be really cool if you felt like you had these powers. So that's where the idea originally came from. And it's a beautiful game as well.
Yeah, I like how, just watching the tutorial here, so it's like this sort of escape room aspect of it where you're trying to like figure it all out.
Yeah, yeah.
It's becoming quite popular at the minute.
So you finish the puzzle, and once you finished it, you progress to the next room. There's voices in there. We got the voices from Nick Frost.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, dude, he's so cool. And a few other really, really nice people. And they really add to the vibe, very much like the Portal character, where he's very condescending, he's very jokey.
Yeah.
You have that type of character in this as well, and it helps so much just to loosen the player up, to have a bit of a laugh as well as the puzzles I go through.
Yeah. But no, I think it's a great idea. Like that idea of being like Professor Xavier using like the gear, actually being able to actually control it. It's not just, you know, it's taking away from control. It's more VR.
Yes.
And
yes.
I feel like that's pushing it further. No, I'm really interested by this.
Oh, it's great.
It's
thank you.
Fantastic. And when is this looking to be available?
So Esper 2 is out now. It's out on the Gear VR and it's out on the Oculus Rift now. It's out as the Esper collection, so you get Esper 1 and Esper 2 for a price of both Gear VR and Oculus Rift. So nice. That one's out. It's been out for quite a while now. And it's a very, very good game. You should definitely try it if you're a VR fanatic.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind being Professor X myself. Yeah. So yeah. Yeah, thank you very much, Gary.
No, you're welcome.
Okay, we're back. So, Shoe and Esper 2, did you guys get a chance to get hands-on with them then?
Not with the VR. Again, like I said, the Esper 2, it's extremely popular VR this year, even more so. And I've been going to EGX for a couple of years now. And VR's always been popular, but it's just, for some reason, this year it was just like, okay, we are taking this seriously now, and there's actually really interesting stuff being done with it. But yeah, Esper 2 and Shoe, very different games, but both look really interesting and fun.
Yeah, I think, you know this as well as I do, Rob, but VR ain't no new pony. It's been thrashed around a bit in its concept.
VR is
every
not...
Every 10 years or so?
No, longer than that, right?
Every 10 years or so, VR will pop up. It'll have its like champions, but it'll vanish again, like, you know, without making much of a dent in anything. But I think this time is the time they've got it. I think they've found the money spot here.
I agree.
Because just observing people
and
playing it, the beaming grins on their face.
Well, I'll be honest.
I think that is what they're going for.
I'll be honest. VR had a chance. The first time I tried VR was back in 1994.
I tried it in the 90s and it was awful.
It was awful. It was slow. The hardware couldn't keep up with it. The concept was there, but the hardware wasn't. And I think it's had to wait for the hardware to catch up with the idea of VR. But I do think that what we've got currently in terms of VR with the headsets and that, I don't think that's going to be the final form of VR. Because I know that in countries like South Korea, and in Japan, they're actually working on VR systems that are much bigger and more complex. They're looking at full immersive...
like consumer-grade stuff, and this event...
No, they're actually looking at consumer-grade stuff. What they want, though, is complete immersive VR. So imagine, you know, those walkways where you have 360-degree walking, right? Yeah. Imagine one of those and those tactile glove things where you can actually feel things in the game, and a VR headset, but imagine all of that combined into one system. So one piece of kit, so that you could literally move around and feel things and do things in a virtual world.
I think that's taking it a bit too far.
That's what they're working on.
No, to be honest, I've been going for the past few years, and all of those different parts that...
They already exist.
They are there, and they're on the show. They're on like the show floor, and I think VR is going to be a really good way to enhance people's experiences of games, especially with driving games, and just so many opportunities, really. And I feel like there's actual interest and a hope for VR now, and everyone's behind it. And I'm quite looking forward to see where it goes, really, because this could very well change everything.
Well, I know there's a company in South Korea that one of its goals is to have worldwide to for every home to have a VR room, like a holodeck from Star Trek.
What, like the room in Community where they do the games and the players?
Yeah, but actual VR, you know, like a proper Star Trek holodeck. Every house to have a VR room like that, so people can go in and play games and stuff.
It needs something like the Oculus Rift or PSVR to sort of wedge that door open for that sort of thing to happen.
Well, yeah, but I mean, they're already wedging the door open. I think the next
It's not launched, so we can't say that, but I think it will.
I think it will as well. Given the reactions that you guys have talked about, you know, everyone having, you know, big smiles on their faces while they're trying them.
The queue to play Gran Turismo in VR.
Yeah, that's probably a whole different experience.
Yeah. It was like in a sort of circular thing. So, you know, you had those cars once upon a time where it had like the 4D experience.
Yeah.
So when your car moved, you moved. It had that and VR.
Wow. That's impressive.
So I understand why there was a queue for that.
I mean, there's a lot of titles coming out for VR as well. See, one of the things that, one of the genres that will really benefit from VR is horror.
Oh, no, don't say that. It's terrifying. That's a horrible idea. Don't ever say that again.
What? Horror video games could really benefit from VR.
That'd be poop scary.
Yes, well, I know.
To be honest, that's probably the reason why VR's as big as it is now, because it was the horror games when the indie horror circuit was it wasn't as oversaturated, but when it was becoming a massive trend, it was the VR experience, like the early dev kits of the Oculus Rift, where people were making, you know, not the nicest looking of games, but it was all about the concept, and that's what got people excited, because it was basically a proof of concept that VR is immersive and it can actually work at this day and age now.
I mean, there's that indie horror game coming out soon for the PlayStation VR, and I think it's for the Vive and the Oculus Rift and that as well. Here They Lie. I don't know if you guys have seen.
I heard of that one. But we'll pick this one up again tomorrow on next episode, I think.
Yeah,
we've got like one more interview to go, and I really like this interview because it's basically like Guitar Hero Man and Rez all in one package. But I think the more interesting thing is, in the other case, it was all developers. It was developers we were talking to. But this one, it was a composer, which cuts an entirely different interview, I think. So we'll have this one, which the game in question was Clang, and it's from Snowblind Studios.
Clang, is this the beat-em-up?
No, it's a platformer.
Clang is a platformer. Right, okay. I don't know why, but for some reason, I think I got my wires crossed when I was looking at Clang and thought it was a beat-em-up.
It's a mixture, I would say.
Okay.
It's very different.
All right, well, let's have a listen to this then.
Hello, Rob here, and we're at AGX, and I'm here with Jordan with Snow Cannon Games with Clang. Now, what is Clang?
All right, Clang is euphoric. When I say euphoric, I mean like trance music, rhythm platformer. The goal was to basically push the genre of rhythm games into new territory by combining like the action, combat, exploration, all to the beat of the music.
How do you compose music? How do you compose sound design? When, as I played the game, the effects that you do, the things that you do in the game, have an effect on the way the music and the way the sound design goes. How do you take that from concept to reality?
So basically, the sound effects part takes a lot of planning. I would usually ask him for lists, and we'd go from there. But the music and the game itself were very symbiotic in its nature. Like, he would basically, maybe he would create a level, and he would tell me the feeling he needs to have when he hears the song, and I would try to nail it. So it's still like scoring a game or scoring a movie, but I had to use dance music as the platform for that. But a lot of times I would make a song, and it would inspire him. He's very visual, or Tinimations, Tom Ivar.
Yeah, yeah.
It would inspire him to, like, he would listen to the song, and he'd get ideas for mechanics even, not just, like, level design. But he would get, like, an example is I made a song that sounds kind of sneaky, Mission Impossible-ish. He thought it would be cool to have a level where you have to kind of, like, sneak around and, like, you're being spied on. It turned it into the entire section of that game, of the game is actually like sneak around, don't get caught, and it was all based on me just playing around with a specific sound, you know. So
okay, excellent. I'm assuming this is not your first job as composer on video games, so
yeah, actually,
this is quite like a leap into the dark, really.
Yeah, it is. The first game I worked on, it's got a long title, but short titles, Dragon's Odyssey. The Japanese game is Lost Angelic Chronicles of Fran, Dragon's Odyssey. Yes. Really long. Yeah. It's a Japanese RPG, and I did 38 songs under Jordan Steven, not blind, which is two different aliases. It's all orchestral, no electronic music. I even directed the English dub.
Oh, wow.
Voice acting and everything. It's still supposed to come out on Steam, actually. It got greenlit, and it still hasn't been released. Long story. That's a whole other thing.
I can only imagine, yeah.
But, it was cool. It got me some experience, and this game kind of fell into my lap. I wasn't really looking for work, but he messaged me, and the prototype of the game used my video game remixes, and then I suggested that we should do something from scratch, and then when he got funding, we were able to work on it. So I did have some experience under my belt composing before I worked on this.
This is kind of a transition then, isn't it, really? Because as much as it being a piece of composition, it has like a very big thumb in the sort of DNA of the game, like you were mentioning. So is this maybe a crossroads into making games on your own volition? Rather than just, I say just being composer, but encompassing the whole production of the game, not just the audio end? Perhaps maybe a bridge to that, maybe?
Yeah. The way I see it is like you create your own luck, right? As long as you're doing what you love and you're pursuing it and you're not giving up on it, you're going to create opportunities that come your way just by putting your stuff out there. And I was kind of open to whatever happened.
Yeah.
So when he told me, like, can you make music for my game? I'm like, wow, this is cool. I wasn't thinking about money or jobs or anything. I just thought it was a cool concept, and I wanted to try it out, you know? And it's led to getting a publisher and releasing a game.
It's like nothing I've ever seen before, really. Bit Rezzed, bit Guitaru Man, bit all sorts of things.
So
unique. When is that, what platforms, and when is it going to be available? Clang?
It actually came out yesterday, September 22nd.
Yeah.
It's on Steam right now for the PC, and it's 20% off this first week.
Oh, excellent.
And the reviews are starting to come in and everything, so it's pretty exciting that it's finally out, you know, 2 to 3 years of development.
Well,
so.
Good luck with how the game goes along. But where can we find you online, your music, and the game itself?
The game itself, if you go to snowcannongames.com, there's a website for Clang. The developer is tinimations.com, and I'm blindhandicap.com.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And thank you very much. And as I said, good luck with the game. Hope it goes very well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for talking to us today.
And welcome back. Yeah, that game has a pretty sick soundtrack.
Yeah, like Trance he was talking about. That's not all he does, which I think is good. I played it and it's poor hard. I was saying before I did the interview, I got a good idea of what that game is now, so if we can have a chat, but I am terrible at it. Because it's like games that have reactive music.
So hang on, is this a platformer where the music is important?
The music's important, and when you hit something or kill something or shoot something, that something makes a sound, so that sound has an effect on the score and the sound design of the whole thing.
So it's basically Rez or Child of Eden?
Or Vibribbon or something.
Okay, because you know we were talking about VR, because there's Rez VR now as well.
Yeah, apparently that's really good.
Yeah, I've heard about it. I've heard it's supposed to be amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, Clang sounds like my kind of game.
Yeah. It's really intriguing. Difficult. Very, very difficult, but intriguing.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
And I think, like we said, this is a two-parter.
Yeah.
So that is part one done and dusted. Yeah, I think we've got a very interesting part two coming up with my personal highlights of the show, but I won't spoil that. But in the meantime, yeah, we are Press X. The best way to support us is by heading over to thegeekshow.co.uk and heading to our shop or supporting us by giving us some feedback on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast, because that does cast our net a little bit wider and get us into the ear holes of more people across the world. But yeah, in the meantime, we've been The Geek Show and Press X talking about EGX, and we will pick this up again next time out.
Yes.
So I have been Rob.
I've been Ryan.
And I've been Rob.
See you next time with more EGX.
And thanks for listening.